welcome to another episode of Coram Deo. My name is Kyle, and today we're going to be talking about Baltimore and the rioting that we've seen going on in the news. Now, I have a decent amount of thoughts on this, and I'm going to share them, knowing that there's definitely going to be people who disagree with me, and there's going to be certain things that I say are going to be somewhat hard sayings, if you would. And these are things that I've been thinking about, I've been reflecting on. I haven't been jumping to the media or social media and writing up my thoughts. I'd rather sit on them, reflect on them, meditate, pray, and before speaking. And so these are the thoughts that I've kind of been working through as it comes to this, and just in regards to how I've seen things handled, specifically by the church. And I want to just talk about that for a little bit. Now, for those of you who are not familiar, there are some. I actually talked to my father yesterday. I was like, hey, what do you think about what's going on in Baltimore? And he's like, what's going on in Baltimore? He's been, my dad's a lawyer. He's been in the middle of a trial, so he hasn't had a chance to look at the news. And so there are probably other people like that who have no idea that the Baltimore has been somewhat up in flames due to rioting. That is a response of what is believed to be an injustice that took place by a young man, I believe 25 years old, named Freddie Gray, who was taken by police into custody. And some time between him being picked up and being dropped off at the police station, he received extreme bruising to his spine and his body. Ultimately, he died. And no one knows what happened with him, as there were no cameras that were shown regarding what actually took place in that vehicle. Now, my thoughts are going to be primarily how the church, in my opinion, should be looking at this issue. And naturally, I'm going to be touching on other issues as well, as how the church should be looking at this whole host of issues surrounding injustice and racial inequality and police brutality and, you know, all those kinds of things. And I know I have written and I also have podcasted before about this, but I want to just go ahead and take another time to kind of just like flesh this out a little bit and say some things that I probably didn't say in those other times. Now, one of the things that I think is extremely important is that Christians place themselves or before the world, the watching world, as those who are not surprised by what is taking place. There seems to be a lot of astonishment amongst many Christians in regards to how they are speaking, the verbiage on social media in relation to the rioting. The many, like, I can't believe this is happening, this is sickening, or this is terrible, or look what's going on. And what's interesting to me, in some sense, even baffles me in some scenarios, is the kind of response that Christians have been giving, this kind of shock that something like this could be happening in their own country, in their own land, in Baltimore, you know. And but the Christian is the one who understands that people are in rebellion against God, that there is a kingdom, and that humans, people who have been made in the image of God, have been all rioters. We have all been rioting against the King of Glory. And that rioting can look like all kinds of different things. And when we look at the news and we see the earthly rioting that's taking place and people hitting cars and smashing cars and burning buildings and stealing things out of stores, there's a big problem if we don't see the theological connection. And what I mean by that is that, again, Jesus says in Matthew, if you even call someone a fool, you know, you're basically going to, it's the equivalent of murder. And so you see someone smashing a car, when someone else talks down to, disrespects, or calls someone out of the name, as far as God sees that, that is if God is watching and sees you murder someone, not simply smash a window, but it's as if you took another person's life. And so if we were to have a heaven's eye view at humanity and humanity's rebellion against God, what we would see and how we would perceive it would be infinitely worse than what is seen on television. and the rioting that's taking place on television. And my point in saying that is what you see on television is simply just a microcosm of a much greater spiritual issue. And even more than that, what you see on television is the outworking, a physical illustration of what is going on in the soul of the unconverted person, man, woman, or child. And so when we look at the news and we see this rioting, it should sadden us. It should burden us for our country and for the safety of those in the surrounding areas. It should raise up a lot of emotions, but the emotion that it should not raise is shock. We should not be surprised by it. We should be those who, when the media comes asking, what is going on? We're the ones that say, oh, we know. We have the answer. We know what's going on. We're not surprised by this. This is what we've been saying all along. What you see on the news is a demonstration of what man is capable of, the kind of rebellion, the kind of rioting that man is capable of, and not only capable of, but the kind that every man, woman, and child outside of Christ is doing on a daily basis. And before the King of Glory, before God and His kingdom. And so we are the ones who have answers, and when the ones who are those who have the answer, or to at least understand what is going on, be able to actually explain the narrative, instead of letting the media create its own narrative, being those who actually understand the true narrative of what's taking place in human history, what is actually happening with these people, we are the ones who have an answer to that. And we have to be the ones who are able to speak that answer. And as we do that, we are speaking the gospel and the necessity of the gospel. And so I desire and I wish to see more in social media people, Christians specifically, diagnosing what's going on and through a right biblical and theological lens. Now, one of the other things, and this is one of the great dangers in my mind, as I think about where we're headed as a nation and Christians that are part of America, one of the things that we have to recognize is that we truly are living in and are entering into a post-Christian society. Now, I do not believe that America was a Christian nation. I think that it was a nation founded on Christian principles and heavily influenced by its Christian background, but it wasn't a Christian nation. America has always been a nation that has welcomed people of different faiths, and mostly, knock off the first 100 years of that, and have been a more accepting of people of different faiths. But what I see is that as America has always been not a Christian nation. Again, it's always been influenced by Christian principles. We are entering into an era where Christianity is opposed. The morality of Christianity is opposed. And with that, Christians are going to be, especially young people of my generation, are going to have to engage in a way that's going to be different than how they have had to engage in the past. They're going to have to learn how to navigate the terrain of the public square and engaging in the public square in ways that are different than have been in the past. Some of that is because of the difference of being in a post-Christian era. Some of that is because the ways in which the public square has been engaged in the past has been incorrect or unwise. But as we as Christians seek to engage in the public square, seek to have a voice, there are a few dangers that I think that arise. One of those dangers is the medium of social media. What has ended up happening with the rise of social media, especially its presence now, is that many Christians, the whole purpose of social media is to respond to things as it happens. As you're brushing your teeth, you tweet, "I'm brushing my teeth." When you're out with your kids at the park and you snap a picture, you post that picture and you say, "Hey, I'm at the park with my kids." Social media has an immediacy to it, where when something's happening, you need to engage, you need to write about it. And the danger of that is that within the Christian framework, there's the idea of being sober-minded, there's the idea of guarding the tongue, there's the idea of being patient and choosing words carefully and making sure that the words you choose are edifying and build up and encouraging and not tearing down, but building up. Those are all principles that come in with communicating within the Christian framework. And when you add the social media dynamic, what you end up seeing is that people, without really thinking through what they're writing, without even thinking whether or not what they're writing is actually going to build people up and encourage, or it's going to tear down, people are posting status updates on social media. whether it's Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, or any other mediums, which I do not know about. And my point in saying all that is that I think that that is going to be very, very dangerous, and is really going to cripple the testimony of Christians if they do not understand or do not learn how to use social media winsomely, wisely, and with biblical conviction. We cannot post status updates like the world posts status updates. We cannot tweet like the world tweets. We have to be tweeters and status updaters that are actually using biblical ethics as we seek to post. We must be faithful. We must, again, quorum deo in the realm of social media. We must tweet and status update as if the Lord is watching. And what I've seen in social media is I've seen people who say a white Christian brother, maybe someone who's actually very respectable, who you know is on the side of justice, if you would. People, and they're writing about the rioting and saying, well, this is so terrible, and people are coming back at them and say, well, so is this. What happened to Freddie Gray is terrible, and they're posting something like an article. And I think that is tremendously disrespectful and unloving. You should not assume that because someone is critiquing the rioting, that automatically means that they're justifying or that they feel that it was okay for the police to assault the young man. That kind of way of thinking, love believes in all things and hopes in all things. And to believe in hope and to not hope in a brother that they are thinking rightly, and to not believe that they are with you on an area of that has to deal with justice, as they serve the same just God and should desire the same justice that you do. So to do those kinds of things without thinking about, you know, how do I encourage or build up? And again, we're talking about public platforms, not direct messages and talking to someone directly, but posting so everybody can see. I think that that is a demonstration of a lack of wisdom in regards to how to properly engage within social media. Another issue with social media is that it gives everyone a voice. Now, one of the things, as someone who does biblical counseling that I've talked about before with other counselors, and it's kind of an inside joke, but it's so true, is that everyone thinks that they're a counselor. Have you noticed that? That if you have an issue, even if you don't ask for help, everyone wants to tell you what you should do in that situation. Believer, unbeliever, man, woman, even child, everyone has an opinion, and everyone thinks that their opinion is worth sharing. And few actually have an opinion that say, you know what, I'm going to keep this to myself. What social media does is it gives everybody a voice. Everyone now has a voice to speak, whether or not they are wise enough to use it, whether or not they are mature enough to use it in a way that's going to be edifying and building up. Everyone has a platform, and everyone has a medium to actually express that platform or use that or capitalize on that platform. And I mean, that's humbling even to me as I'm doing this, the recognition that, and the self-reflection that comes with, I have a voice. Does that mean my voice needs to be heard? If you have a podcast, or you have a blog, or you have a Twitter account, whatever the medium is, if that's not a question that has actually come to your mind that you've actually thought and prayed through, then you have a lot of work to do. Because again, just because you have access to speak doesn't mean that you necessarily have the knowledge, the wisdom, the maturity, or a host of the character, or a host of other things to actually speak. And again, what social media has done is it's given a bunch of people the medium to speak, and as they speak, and maybe whether they lack using the proper way, you know, speaking with the proper grace and those kinds of things, everyone's doing it. So now you have people who are in the media who are being interviewed within the Christian circles. You have people, generally young people, and who are, you know, being raised up and are doing things all because, again, through social media. We live in an era where people become book authors and pastors and celebrities within the Christian circle because they are good YouTubers, or because they're good rappers or spoken word artists. And, you know, we lift people and elevate people based on principles that are unbiblical. And I think within social media, that's a very big danger when it comes to issues like this. Things that are so sensitive as dealing with the rioting and issues of racial reconciliation, everyone who may even experience those dynamics is not necessarily equipped to actually speak on them. And those are two of the things that I see as it relates to social media that I think are dangerous, that need to be engaged with. How to engage with social media properly. We can't be those fast-paced people who tweet and status update without thinking and just go with our emotions, whatever we're thinking at the time. We have to be sober-minded when we are doing those things. And then also considering that you may feel something or believe something about what's going on, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to share those thoughts. You may need to just keep them to yourself, or at least keep them until they're actually refined in your mind and can actually be expressed in a way that's going to be edifying and not discouraging. Now, kind of moving on, the other thing that I've noticed with this situation here is that, now I was at the Gospel Coalition conference, and they had a panel on racial reconciliation. And on this panel, what they had was basically, they had a friend of mine who I thought did really, really good job, Alex Medina, talking about racial reconciliation and how to do those things. They had a Pastor Copeland there as well, and then they had a chief of the police station, a captain of the police station, with Trayvon Martin, that police station, and then they had a DA, a district attorney. And I went there expecting this is going to be a great conversation talking about how racial reconciliation in light of the gospel. I didn't get any of that. What I honestly got, and I don't fault necessarily the panelists for this. Again, I want to make it clear. I think that specifically Alex Medina and Pastor Copeland did a decent job, did a good job even, with trying to answer the questions the best way they could. But the way that the questions were framed and the whole structure of it was very much targeted more towards a social gospel than a regenerating gospel. And it was I left there really concerned. As after it actually ended, a sister sitting next to me, about a middle-aged black woman sitting next to me, she kind of tapped me and leaned over and said, "Hey, can I ask you a question?" And I was like, "Yeah, sister, what's up?" And she was like, "What are your thoughts about this panel that just took place?" And I told her, I was like, "Oh, honestly, I'm very disappointed. That was kind of weird. It didn't really seem to focus on the gospel. It seemed like a social gospel." She's like, "Okay, I thought I was the only one. I'm not. I'm glad that someone else saw what I just saw." And so I know I wasn't the only one who thought this. And, I've talked to other people there, and they said the same thing. And what it basically was is it was encouraging pastors to be community organizers, and telling pastors that if they're better, if they pastor their cities more, pastor their community more, and organize their communities better, then they will see less issues like what's going on, like the rioting and everything else, because the primary reason that this is taking place is because people lack jobs. Crime amongst poor minority urban neighborhoods is predominantly motivated due to socioeconomic issues and lack of jobs. And pastors can help the people in their community get jobs. They can help, again, organize community and have this outreaches and, these kind of things that, again, kind of like this glorified community organizer. And to me, that was really disturbing because it was kind of like King all over again. We don't need a liberation theology. We don't need a social gospel. We need a regenerating gospel. And the primary way in which a pastor engages with his community is not through community organizing, but it's of being a prophet to his neighborhood. It's of being a witness of the gospel, the gospel that changes souls. That's the pastor. The pastor's primary duty is to shepherd his people and to evangelize the lost. And to do the work of evangelist, and to, again, the pastor to shepherd his people. It's not to just simply organize a community. Now, I think that can be, and so in one sense, a pastor needs to decide, does he want to carry the mantle of pastor, or does he want to give that up for one of a community organizer? To me, that's a poor trade. But if you have not been called to the ministry, if you have not been truly called to pastor God's people, then I beg you to get out of pastoral ministry and go organize a community. But if you have been called of God to be a pastor, to preach the gospel from the pulpit week in, week out, to counsel God's people, to shepherd God's people, then you are not a shepherd. You're not a community organizer. You do not stoop to that. Now, and I say stoop to that, I'm not saying that someone who's a community organizer, who's a Christian, is at a low, has a lower calling. What I am saying is that someone who has been called to pastoral ministry, who then forsakes that to go to community organizer, is going against God and is going against their calling. And in that, they are stooping. And so I find that disturbing. I found that whole panel disturbing. And I find the way in which much of what's been happening in the media disturbing. I have yet to hear one minister who has been interviewed on national television about the rioting actually say anything related to the gospel. It has all been social issues and social economic issues and talking about the plights of African American in the urban context. All of those things are true, but none of those things are eternal. What's eternal is the souls of men, women, and children. And the pastor, above anyone else, is to know that and recognize that on the most fundamental, most foundational level, what is most necessary is that people's hearts are changed through the power of the proclamation of the gospel, not that people have better jobs and better salaries and babysitters for their children while they go to work. And so those things are extremely important. Those things can help out a people group, an urban context who need jobs and who need to support their families. Absolutely. I am by no means minimizing that. I'm just saying that when you put that on the backdrop of the internality of the soul of a person is much more important than even their financial situation. You know, I'd rather be homeless on the street and with my family all knowing Christ than in the biggest mansion with a family of unbelieving children. And I mean that. I absolutely, utterly mean that. I would rather be homeless and my children saved than live in a mansion and then not know God. And we have to understand that. As a church, we have to understand what is most critical, what is most important. And I think that this is a demonstration of failing that. Again, when you're in the media and all these ministers are being interviewed and no one's talking about the gospel, everyone's talking about socioeconomic issues, behold, that's what is the focal point of ministry at this point. And so I think that's very concerning. Now, one final thing. When I talk to my children, I have my daughter's 6, my son's 3, so primarily when I'm talking to my children, my daughter, but both of them, and they begin, my kids do not throw temper tantrums, they know that that's not acceptable in the home, but every now and then, they'll get to, like, the precipice of a tantrum, and then, like, you know, I gotta bring them back. But one of the things I tell my children is that idolatry is when you want something so bad that you are willing to sin to get it. Again, idolatry is when you want something so bad you are willing to sin to get it. That thing that you are willing to sin in order to have is an idol. Now, let's apply that to what we are seeing in the streets of Baltimore. What is happening here? Justice is important. Justice is critical. Justice is godly. But what we have and what we're seeing in Baltimore is justice as an idol. What do I mean by that? When you are willing to go out into the streets to steal people's things, to destroy their livelihoods, to disrupt and reject and violently pursue assaulting authority, and all those things for justice, justice has become an idol. Justice has now surpassed your need to love. And one of the things that is happening here as I look at what's going on at the rioting, and this is why it's so bad that pastors are not talking about the gospel when they're being interviewed in the media, is that they are what a minister, so let me put it this way. When a minister is being interviewed, what are your thoughts about the rioting? And that minister is encouraging the pursuit of justice, saying, you know, yeah, this is about justice, this is about justice, this is about justice, this is about justice. All they're doing is flaming the fuel for idolatry amongst people who have elevated justice to the place of God in their hearts. And so they are willing to assault, rob, steal, lie, and thieve for it. what pastors and ministers need to be saying is, behold the idols of the heart. The urban context has elevated justice to the place of God in the hearts. Why? Why has justice been elevated to such a status? And the answer for that, that's when you get into the socioeconomic issues. You see, we sin and idols raise up in our hearts because of internal pressures as well as external pressures. Someone who's struggling with singleness is going to struggle with idolizing relationships internally because they feel lonely, as well as externally when they see other people who are in relationships. And so you can have outside pressures that are pressing in, and you have inside pressures. Someone who struggles with lust, they're going to have this burning desire for sexual gratification inside of themselves, which elevates itself to the place of God, where they're willing to disobey God and how he has organized and ordained sexual intimacy within the covenant of marriage. They're going to object to that and seek to pursue sexual gratification outside of that framework from within because they feel sexual urges. And then from out, whether it's via pornography or whether they're, you know, the various billboards and TV shows and commercials, all that is enticing them to greater measures of lust. And so what you have within the urban context is you have people from within, they've experienced injustice. Then on from without, the external influences of injustice has caused them to elevate injustice to a place of idolatry in the heart. And what they need more than anything else is the gospel, which reconciles justice, but on an internal level. And so ministers need to be talking about how this applies within the gospel realities. Because again, the fact of the matter is that idolatry is what is what you're seeing on the streets of Baltimore is idolatry. What is happening nationwide amongst officers who abuse their power is idolatry of power. We are dealing with idolatry, whether it's with the officers, whether it's with the judicial system, or whether it's with, and side note, the Supreme Court is idolatrous as it thinks it is asserting its authority over defining a God-given institution of marriage, that they have the authority to redefine an institution that's been around for thousands of years and is cross-cultural, that they have that authority. That's idolatry. That's pride. That's arrogance. Now, again, so what I would like to see is more people engaging with what's happening for what it is, idolatry. But this is what that looks like, though. Now, listen to this here. How do you engage with a Christian who is struggling with their sin, struggling with idolatry? Do you condescend? Do you call them names? Do you criticize with ungraciousness? Or do you seek to love them, to come alongside them, and with compassion and with love tell them the gospel, tell them that they are blind, tell them that they are missing it? I don't know about you, but when I'm engaging in evangelism and I see somebody who's blinded by their sin, my default reaction to that is not to just, you know, say, oh, you know, just call them all kinds of names and talk down and say this, that, and the other. My desire is to come alongside them, to be like Christ to them, to be gentle, to come alongside them and gently love them and encourage them in the gospel of reconciliation, that they are sinners, that they have rebelled against God, that they do not know God, that they need to repent and believe in the gospel, that Jesus Christ came to die under the wrath of God for the sins of all those whom would believe. And if they would put their trust in them, that they would, as a gift, receive the righteousness of Christ, be forgiven by the Father, and be in right standing with God for all of eternity. And what's happening is, again, that's not happening. You have people in social media talking about these people as just being evil people, not being people blinded by their sin who need to have their eyes open and their hearts changed. And so when you actually look at this situation, this goes for black and white. When black brothers look at the police officers as having idolatry, at being the root of their issue is not these evil men who just are evil and for evil's sake. Yes, all men are evil. We're all depraved. But they look at these men, the officers, those who abuse their power, and recognize that these people are blinded by the idolatry of power, and so their pride has blinded them to love. and it's preventing them from loving well. They need gospel. They need to be reconciled to God, and after being reconciled to God, to man. And then on the other side of that, when people look at the rioters, and when the Christian conservatives look at the rioters, if they look at the rioters as being men primarily, not these evil rioting people who just straight up just whatever, they look at them, these are people who are blinded by their sin. Pride has become justice is an idol in their heart that is causing them to reach out the way that they are. What they need is the gospel. What they need is to be loved towards repentance and forgiveness through Christ. If we understood that idolatry was the root behind everything that we're seeing here, then the whole conversation from the church would be different. The world would be talking about socioeconomic issues and politics and how this and this, and if you had this amount of schooling, and if you had this amount of money being funneled into the schools and this, that, and social programs and ways, if you raise minimum wage, that's what the world is going to be talking about. And what the church would be talking about is that the world is blind. These people have elevated of justice to the place of God. You have elevated power and pride to the place of God. Everyone involved in this, we need repentance in this land. We need the gospel in this land. We need grace. We need love. We need Christ elevated, lifted up before the nation. There'd be two completely different conversations. One would lead to rebirth, while the other one just leads to bickering and more debate. And what the church has done is it's forsaken its birthright as being the prophet to this nation, and it's basically picking up the mantle of social worker, of community organizer. And I think when that's happening, it's actually self-defeating. It's the church losing its power. And so I think it needs to be recovered. And so with that being said, those are my thoughts related to Baltimore. I'm praying that that this would be an opportunity that the church would not take for granted, but would grasp and pursue rightly. And I pray for the people in Baltimore, that especially the churches in Baltimore, that they would rise up to the occasion for gospel proclamation. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this. I have about a week or two left of classes, and then these podcastings will become much more consistent. I know I've said that before. It's been a crazy, crazy month with my wife being pregnant, ministry duties and needs, and school, work, all those kinds of things. So it's been a little bit hectic, but I'm looking forward to getting more consistent with the podcasting. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to listen, and I will absolutely have some Q&As coming, as I have a lot of Q&A questions that have come in. Grace and peace. Love you all. Thank you for listening.